Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Bad Batch Report.
Roger.
This is great. This is one of those little bits that evolves to, at some point, it will just not be recognizable.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're just recently listening to the Bad Batch Report, it's kind of a little holdover from our Clone Wars report, where Ken would often make some great noises of, like, the news report, and then it turned into drums, and now we're getting into record groans and battle droids doing musicals, which I absolutely approve of.
Oh, we absolutely need that. That's off-Broadway potential there.
Like, yeah, that. Yeah. Someday, maybe we'll hire someone to take all of the different musical little motifs you've made and blend them all together into a great dance track.
That person would have lost some sort of fight, but yes, I'm willing to put it
down. And then we can have the Aqualish listen to that. Anyway, enough about music. Let's get into this show. We are talking about episode 6 of Bad Batch. It is called Decommissioned. I am Joseph Scrimshaw. And of course, the person who is making all the great noises with their mouth is Ken Knapsack.
Oh, that I do. Happy to be here, as always, for a great episode here. The 6th of the season. I can't believe we're already at 6, buddy.
Yeah, we're already at 6 of, who knows? This is great. I can't wait to find out where it's all going. This episode was written by Amanda Rose Munoz and directed by Nathaniel Villanueva, another name that you see pop up a lot in that directing credits for the Clone Wars. These episodes continue, Ken, to be, like, remarkably consistent in length for streaming. This episode was about 24 minutes long. What was your overall reaction? Did you love Decommissioned, like it, struggle with it? What did you do?
Well, I keep just loving the length, which is I'm not surprised that this is, you know, the length and it's consistent, but it's just, it makes it so much easier. Today I was a 5 a.m. wake up call. I was like, all right, I can concentrate for 24 minutes. I could do this. And do it again and again and again. But as far as the actual episode, I loved it. Whereas last week was an episode I had a lot to take from, a lot for me to enjoy, but it might have been, okay, cool. I liked it. It's an episode so far, not a meh, but just like I really loved it, but there was others I loved more. This is an episode I can say, it might be outside of the first episode, which is kind of its own thing at 70 minutes in a mini movie there. This might have been my favorite episode so far.
Yeah, this one was a really big one for me in terms of just tying together all of the different ideas, all of the growth, and all of the aesthetics. You know, I think this is definitely a standalone mission filled with like lots of cool action in the tradition of Clone Wars in particular, but a lot of ideas at work. So it never just felt like, the shooting's fun. Like the shooting, the why of the shooting was always present.
We need the why of the shooting. It makes the shooting more important and valuable.
Yeah. So any other like specific overall reaction for you of why this one popped?
Yeah, it was such a wonderfully written, self-contained episode that connects to so much. And it connects to, and I, a little bit later I might dive into even, not questioning, but just like analyzing and talking, just have some thoughts about like what Bad Batch is doing and saying like, you don't have to know everything, but I don't even saying it really helps if you know everything. I think it's just inviting you to know everything, which is great. And a lot of people want that kind of stuff. And so that this episode worked from that. You talked about the imagery, the motif, the feeling, the vibe, but also the emotional canon is huge. And the importance, the weight of this episode, when I think that the complete tale of the Bad Batch is told, you're going to go back to this episode as a big turning point for them. When big questions, the questions that Hunter is being forced to wrestle with at the end of this episode, when they start answering those questions, I think we'll look back at this episode as realizing how important it was for Trace and Rafa to ask those questions of them, literally or figuratively over the course of the episode. So I really love that. You mentioned the look, the action. It just worked. And dare I say, it's very critic-like. It was firing on all cylinders.
Yes, it was an emotional and physical thrill ride. Yeah, I love what you're talking about, and we can save it to talk about later, but it really struck me with this episode, too, I think anyone could sit down and watch this episode and they were given the information they needed and they could understand what was happening and they could enjoy the action and the character moments. But it is now operating in this weird world where, you know, if you know Trace and Rafa, that hits differently. If you find yourself in the weird life position to have a deep emotional reaction to a tactical droid's head, yeah, it lands different, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm happy to dive into that at some point if you want to. But for me, yeah, I think I was thrilled that this episode was a pretty direct follow-up to last week's episode, which was the cliffhanger where Sid was basically like, I can kind of, you know, demand that you work for me and hold the fact that I know you're valuable and there's something going on with you. I can hold that over your head and I can kind of force you to work for me. And I love that this was just direct follow-up. It was a fun, action-packed adventure, but the fun was balanced out by the great sort of visual imagery that they were just in a burning industrial hellscape.
Yeah.
So I say fun in that, like, yeah, the action was thrilling. It was well, you know, orchestrated so that the audience was engaged. But there was nothing fun about it for the characters, right?
This is like
a burning industrial hellscape. That's like one of those great just images that shows like this can do, that science fiction can do really well of they look like they're fighting inside their own souls, you know?
I love that we are on sort of the ground level of the galaxy as this big switch over happens. And we might eventually get to some upper crust settings or something like that. I'd love to see that too. But so far, you know, even with Ord Mantell and the great little beat at the end of, you know, here it's kind of seedy. Yeah, isn't it great? But just you and I have often talked about and celebrated even. That this is where the oppression of the Empire is felt and will be really felt. And so I really love that we're That's the world we're playing in right now, or the part of the galaxy we're playing in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like the show does a great job of having this feel like, yep, this is the one adventure that they have here with a beginning and a middle and an end of their mission on Corellia. But it so continues all the big themes of the absence of Crosshair, Omega's growth, poor Wrecker's head. Who did the Bad Batch want to be in this new world? All those big things. But I think what I really loved the most about this episode is that it continued the themes from previous episodes, and I think is kind of going to be the big idea of the whole show, is that everything is given weight by telling the story of the sudden horrific galactic change. And the fact that we went to Corellia, great, we can talk about that, but it's really starting to come together with all the individual episodes. It's like we're going on a tour of the galaxy to show how different places are affected by the Empire, and to show that everywhere is affected by this change, right? We've really gone on a tour of planets that, especially if you're kind of an all-in Star Wars fan, you know, right? Kamino, Ondron, Sulukumai, Pantoro, Ord Mantell, Corellia. Now it's kind of got me excited to, like, well, where are we going to go next? And if we go there, it will be that fun, oh, wow, cool, we're going to this planet that I am a fan of because I'm a Star Wars person. But it will also be to tell the story of, are they cheering for the Empire there on Pantora? Are they, like on Sulukumai, going, oh, crap, this is bad, we got to get out of here? Or are they just forced to, have a totally different kind of, like, work and society ethos like Corellia?
That's a great point. I'd love to chat about that for a second. Of it is fun. Ord Mantell is great to hear and see. We love those, and the Pantora thing was great. Yeah, a lot of us watching and those listening probably got really excited at Corellia for myriad reasons. But the weight behind it, the use of it, it's not just Ringo Starr and his all-star band of planets. You know, like, there is some great purpose when we go there. So what I see it working as a setting it up, and we can talk about how this starts to really connect with the rest of the Star Wars story that we're familiar with, but really just going through the galaxy, like you're saying, and going, let's take a checklist of how this is affecting everyone and these names and planets that you've lived with your entire life as a fan. We're going to really analyze what's going on here in small little bite-sized chunks. We obviously don't have a 3-part documentary on Corellia in the early days, but yeah, it's working for me on that level. And I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. And it makes me really hopeful that we'll get to bounce to lots of familiar places and see what's going on there, as well as just see them beautifully rendered in this amazing animation. Let's dive into the big themes, as we always do. What ideas were at stake in this episode? What were you feeling there?
So I kind of do this on purpose. I do this kind of theme worksheet here where I almost want to show my work on how I get the answer. And there's some big themes that are clearly emerging, the idea of teamwork and working for something beyond yourself, which leads into the big theme of choosing sides. And I have pulled a ton of quotes from this episode, but in putting it all together and putting it down on paper, I focused on this one here, and it spiders off into a lot of things we're probably going to talk about here today, but where does strength come from? And what is strength? And we start with Omega training. And now a lot of stuff come out of that little great little training sequence, and it plays in the episode. And we got this idea of, she's got to tune out distractions and all this kind of stuff. But Sid, with an insult that I, as a little wispy kid, heard a lot growing up of noodle arms. I've been called that by family members before. Sid says that, and it's a fun little beat, but it's true in the sense of the actual mechanics, and you see how well she shoots, and anyone who's worked a bow, I don't have success working bows, but you could just take it on the surface. But throughout the episode, there's all these things that feed into what is true strength and where does it come from? And you could have all the arm strength in the world, but if you don't have a team behind you, at one point Hunter literally takes down the support post. He says support post because you've got to tumble what's on top. The idea of there's the moment where Trace comes in and literally says your arms are looking a little shaky. Clearly there a little callback, and Omega doesn't back down. And so I'm like, well, strength comes from resolve too. And all of these things flow nicely into the rebellion, by the way, the theme of teamwork. But that's kind of where I started the episode, started with my theme journey, so to speak, is what is strength And how do you build up your strength? Sid literally says that. And what are the factors that go into that?
Oh, that's great. I think that's tying together a lot of great little micro character moments to the very big macro moment of that's what we are trying to do, Trace and Rafa, and everybody who is involved in various burgeoning pieces of the rebellion. They're trying to topple this horrible oppressive regime that is growing. I love that. I think that's a great observation, the different ideas, and I really appreciate it as a fellow noodle arm. my father tried to teach me how to shoot a bow and arrow, and I got okay with it, but definitely there were some noodle arm challenges when I was young, so I related to Omega. Yeah, I think for me, some of those same beats, I processed through what I think was very explicit, particularly at the end of the show, about choosing sides, choosing your fight, but maybe this connects with the way you were looking at strength. I really started thinking about it from the perspective of autonomy, of do you get to choose your fight, or do you even choose to choose your fight, or do you just do what you're told? And I thought there were a lot of great different permutations of that. You know, we know that the Bad Batch is used to just following orders, and Hunter even has the great quote at the end to make that crystal clear of saying, to be honest, things were clearer when we were just soldiers. The top of the episode, really following up on kind of the cliffhanger from last week, is that Sid just chooses not only this mission without knowing what it's about or who it's for, but chooses that they're going to do it at all. And it's a fun, jokey line, but at the beginning, Sid says, "Allow me to decide for you, you're in." And when Hunter kind of agrees, she's like, "Yeah, I know, I already told you, you're in." So it's like really underlined right away that Bad Batch is kind of handing over their autonomy, like when they were soldiers. They're just, they feel like they're over a barrel, so they're just acting for Sid, you know. And we know that they haven't been fighting for anything. They've been protecting Omega, but they've just been fighting, you know, to get by, to get the next thing, to stay alive, to keep one another safe. And then we get this great contrast where we learn that Trace and Rafa are making this very active choice to fight the Empire. They know exactly what they're fighting for and why. Rafa's got that great line at the end of take it from me, in the end we all choose sides. And then I feel this even gets reinforced by the great constant comedy slash tragedy of the battle droids, that the clankers are just following whatever orders are beamed to them. And we even get that great line from one of the B1 droids, orders are orders.
Yes.
Don't have a blaster, don't even have hands, but I'm just going to do what I'm absolutely told. And it's basically the complete opposite of what these droids have been doing for years, right? Yeah. Two other things to this that I'd like to talk to you about. For me, the kind of choosing your fight, choosing your autonomy, that kind of made Omega's crossbow journey resonate with me, thinking about it that way. Like, I love what you're saying about strength, and that makes so much sense. But I also like this idea that it's a very literal visual of Omega, you know, developing the strength in the choice of where is she pointing that weapon? Who is she shooting at? You know, where are you kind of pointing your weapon? Where are you pointing your strength? It was like, for me, that made the crossbow really resonant with the theme, as well as just being, this is Omega coming of age and getting her signature weapon, like I hope she was going to.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to that weapon. There's a lot to those moments. I absolutely agree with you there, and it can represent so much. And this idea, too, of digging into the idea of you're working for something beyond yourself, I love at the end, it's so clear, right? If you miss this big theme, you're working to miss it.
Yeah, you got hit in the head with it like your wrecker. And there's nothing wrong with that, is making the ideas very crystal clear.
Yeah, but choosing sides and that kind of stuff, what the hunter says, to be honest, things were clearer when we were just soldiers going into the orders thing, going in. But I love that. It's very honest. He literally says, to be honest, but you can see him just almost kind of like, yeah, let me just tell you what's going on. Because going back to even some of the Sid stuff, the Bad Batch does need credits. They are trying to protect Omega. They got some purpose, but they're really doing this for survival. It's not a survival like a power grab. It's just trying to get by. And I look at Trace and Rafa when we met them in season 7 of Clone Wars. That could describe them in a lot of ways, right? Yeah, just doing it to get by. And then once you start being exposed and learning who you are and connecting and thinking beyond yourself, I think it's Rafa has a great line of just, who am I? Who are you? And I just love that that's kind of one of the themes that is just put in the Bad Batch's face. Tech even has a reaction, kind of a head hangdog expression of, yeah, oh gosh, we're just out here trying to survive, not connecting anything big. It's on their faces.
Yeah, no, you said a bunch of great stuff there. I think it's really great that at this point, the Bad Batch have decided what they don't want to do. They don't want to serve the Empire, as Tech will tell you. They have ideological differences, but they haven't decided what they are fighting for at this point, and that's great. And I think we can talk more about Trace and Rafa, Rafa in particular, but I think it's very, very purposeful that this is a journey she has gone on, right? She has been on a mission that's just for the credits and doesn't care about the why.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing for me, under this big theme of choosing your fights and do you have autonomy to choose what you're fighting for, is the both funny but mostly tragic Wrecker stuff really, really fell into that, right? That we've got this increased clarity in this episode that Wrecker is probably going to lose the ability to choose his fights very soon. It seems like with every head strike, we hear him getting closer to wanting to obey Order 66, right? Or wanting to just fall in line. He starts mumbling after this latest head injury that good soldiers follow order. He hears Crosshair's voice saying good soldiers follow orders. So it's this very ominous contrast, right? As Hunter and maybe other members of the Bad Batch are really given thought to, what are we fighting for? What do we want to fight for? We need to make a choice. And knowing that Wrecker is probably going to lose the ability to make a choice any moment now.
Yeah, I love, too, that this is now pretty clear. You know, I don't think there was any too much debate on what was going on with Wrecker, other than, you know, drank too many White Claws the night before. I understand sugary drinks, but now he it's the chip, and we know it. And so now it's this ticking clock of storytelling tactic that helps with the themes that you're talking about, that we're talking about here today. We know what's going on, so we know that's how that's going to run up against what the team is learning, what the team will be trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and it's this great tension of not knowing exactly how or when that horror is going to happen, but knowing it's coming in some way or another is really, really great. Any other sort of big ideas or themes for you?
No, I mean, it's pretty much, I mean, working from beyond yourself, we can start transitioning to how that connects, which is, it's funny, this has come up a lot now, but Shmi, Anakin, no one helps anyone. That's the problem. That whole thing, it just keeps coming up in a lot of our conversations over the last couple episodes.
It really does. And I want to dive into that in just a moment, because I feel like for me, that was like one of the big connections to the rest of Star Wars morality and perspective and all that. One other theme I wanted to talk about in the episode I thought was kind of strong in this particular episode is this idea of what has value. Almost every episode, I feel like the themes are about shifting identity or shifting values, but this one really, again, underlined it, bonked you on the head like Wrecker. That the idea that the MacGuffin of this episode, the thing that moves everything, is that the tactical droid's value has just entirely changed. Tech even says very clearly, with clones now serving the Empire, knowing how to defeat them just went up in value. So the tactical droid's head, this idea of all of this learned knowledge to defeat the clones is now, it's the exact same thing, but now we're looking at it from an entirely different point of view. And then that seems to kind of echo out too with what we're actually seeing in this foundry on Corellia. And this is where I think if you're kind of a little bit more of an all-in Star Wars fan, it makes a difference to know that, oh, wow, the battle droids' bodies appear to be melted down, probably to become new Star Destroyer hulls.
Right.
Maybe early TIE fighters, right? The fact that the battle droids still have value, but it's changed. They're just metal to be remade into new and different machinery for Palpatine to crush people with.
Yeah, I was going to say the machines of war keep marching on there. And that's a great little canon bit of information we got, and not a huge canon bit, but I was fascinated by that too. But I also the meaning of it not lost on me as well. But where you are, just knowing, seeing Cornet sitting in the background and just picturing the Star Destroyers overhead that we'll see being built later on in Solo. It was effective.
Yeah, and it was really like, I don't know, I don't think the episode was explicit on this, and maybe there'll be more canon, but there was a part of me that was like, you know those battle droids from The Phantom Menace that people weren't sure about in 1999? Their melted down bodies might be part of the Star Destroyers from the original trilogy, like literally, you know?
Take that. I don't know why I'd be aggressive with it, but yes, yes, no, I like that.
Everything is connected. And then I think that a lot of what was going on in the episode is exactly what you're talking about, is connection. It is people choosing a better way. And a lot of what truly had value, obviously, Trace and Rafa and the Bad Batch all wanted to complete their mission and get that tactical droid's head. But their actions really made it clear that to them, the true value is people and family, right? They're making choices again and again to try to complete the mission, but not at the cost of hurting one another. You know, even the Bad Batch using the stun bolts on the workers, you know, was a very on purpose thing. And then all these great connections that come up because Bad Batch and Trace and Rafa are closer in what they value than maybe they initially realize.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about this big theme of, helping one another in the galaxy. I kind of thought of it about it from the perspective of kindness begets kindness. Mm-hmm. And I felt in a good way the shadow of Ahsoka Tano, right? Because not that long ago in the scheme of things, she met Rafa and Trace. Rafa was really out for herself. Ahsoka was wanting to reconnect to her Jedi values, and through helping Rafa and Trace, Ahsoka really recommitted to that her Jedi value is, if you see people in need, you help them. And now here Rafa and Trace are running around the galaxy trying to help people. And then I feel like that sort of that kindness begets kindness, let's help one another, just echoes out through the episode.
Yeah, it echoes out through the episode and through the rest of the galaxy and over the course of days, months, years, decades, it will all come to a great important purpose. And along the way, it's important. Yeah, no, I love what you're saying here. I love the connection. I love the, you can't help but have some Ahsoka vibes. And we're not just talking about potential stuff at the end, but it just all through it. It really tracked well for me going back to season 7 of Clone Wars.
Yeah. And then I feel like it's just this idea that pops up in Star Wars that one kind action begets another kind action, and cruel actions can lead to a cycle of violence or hate, right? And one of the things I really love in Rise of Skywalker is that chain of Rey helping the Vexus, and BB-8 seeing that and helping Dio, and on, you know, that just literal chain. And I felt like that was going on in this episode too, of, you know, Trace turns back for Omega, and then Hunter has, when Trace actually saves Omega, Hunter has that really deep, honest, great delivery of thank you, you know, and then it becomes from Hunter, if we want to get out of here, we need to work together. And Tech and Trace do work together to reactivate the battle droids. And by the time they're done with all of these exchanging moments of empathy and helping one another, Hunter trusts Trace and Rafa enough to, you know, give them the data rod. Which data rod's a fun thing to say. I'll rephrase that next time. Sorry about that. Anyway.
Data rod it is.
He passes on the information to his friends.
Yes. Yes. No, it works so well. And it is a baton of goodness indeed. And when I asked the question up top of how do you build strength? Where do you get strength from, and how this starts to connect into the whole thing? You start laying it down on the story map. These are all the pieces, you know. You build up strength not just from physical stuff, resolve, tuning out distractions, connecting, teamwork around you. You build that up, and then what do you do with that? You got to connect to a bigger picture. You got to do something outside of yourself. You got to choose a side, and if you don't, with what's going on, you're gonna choose one regardless. So it's nice to maybe get outside that little bubble there. Not be a Sid. We got nothing against Sid yet. We'll see the whole story. But I love it, and it just rolls. This is the rebellion. Not it doesn't have a capital R on it yet, but it's the rebellion forming.
Yeah, no, I love what you said there. And I think that really echoes a lot of other themes in Star Wars, even going back to A New Hope when Han makes the choice to turn around and help Luke. This idea of the battle is so pitched, even right at the beginning of the Empire, that you are going to choose a side by not choosing a side in this particular instance. You're going to end up, if you think you're just doing things for money for yourself, you are going to end up choosing a side. So you might as well do it on purpose.
you could almost, apathy. Yeah, you could almost hear Obi-Wan saying, "You form a symbiotic circle."
Yeah, you must do what you feel is right, of course. Yeah.
You're plugged in, though. You're plugged in some way, somehow, and I love it.
Yeah. The other thing for me of connections to the larger Star Wars storytelling is just this is a story of coming of age, like many Star Wars stories. There's a lot of other things going on, but every episode it is clear and present and in the front that Omega is changing and growing. And I really liked that there was no discussion, no possibility of leaving Omega behind on Ord Mantell. And maybe that's because it's very seedy. But for me, it was great to feel like, well, we had those episodes early on where they got a bunch of great parenting advice from Sula Quayne in particular of, hey, kids are going to get in trouble. You just got to be there to watch out for them. And we have the episode where Omega makes it really clear, I don't want to be left behind. I want to be part of the squad. And they give her the equipment and they make her part of the squad. And I think a lesser show might backtrack on that a little bit and have a scene where they try to convince her to stay on Ord Mantell. And I really appreciate the forward movement of we've dealt with those issues. She's not going anywhere and she wants to be a part of the squad. And Hunter, at least, is going to respect that decision. So she's there in this dangerous hellhole.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a real coming of age story.
Look, it's, you know, it's tough. They're in a tough spot. I think they it's so right. You're right. They don't question it. She's there. She's part of the team and they're going to find a spot for her that they feel she's best suited for in the moment there. And that's going to continue to grow. And I think over time they'll have that, the bigger votes of confidence. So, hey, here it is. Hey, just sit and watch. Now things go a little wrong from there, but, we get through it, but I love it. No, it's truly a team.
Yeah. Some great team building. Any other, big thoughts of how this episode connects to the larger story and perspective of Star Wars?
I honestly think we touched upon it, but it's that's why I love this episode. A little bit of what I was just saying, kind of this, and I love your use of, you know, just kindness begets kindness and passing the baton of goodness on. It really is the Star Wars story. It really, this episode really connects emotionally to New Hope. It connects emotionally to Rise of Skywalker. It all of them. It's what's going on. It's the spiritual battle of the rebellion versus the Empire. It's not quite real yet. Like I said, no capital R here. Raddus hasn't come out of hyperspace yet, but the spirit is there and what's going on is already happening. The joke, you know, that we've made over time and joked about, man, Palpatine's got the new uniforms for everyone by the next morning. But that, as fun as that is to kind of talk in a robot chicken kind of way, what does that really mean? It just means the machines of war are still going on like you and I were talking about here. And the battle began, whether you want it or not, the battle began. And this episode is really saying the galaxy's changed. Here's what's going on. Are you with us or against us in a general sense, this whole episode? And I thought that was pretty powerful.
Yeah, no, I love that. And it's to paraphrase some of the lines from earlier in this show, this idea that Palpatine is still at war. He is just at war with the people and he's hoping to defeat them before they notice.
Yeah. And you could take all of this on the deeper level and apply it to real life and your life like you and I often love to do with these themes. And you could, as a Star Wars fan, it excites me. I don't want to say even more. I think they're both equal. But as a Star Wars fan, I love this stuff. I've always talked about it. I love the 19 years between episode 3 and episode 4. And this is why you start to really see the dots are starting to connect and the dots are there. They're forming. And I get really geeked up about it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I had both like actual just alone driving or brushing my teeth fascination with this time period. I made jokes to friends because that end of Revenge of the Sith feels so set of like, look, he's Vader. They're looking out at the Death Star being built. And now what happens for 19 years? Do Palpatine and Vader just stand around and Vader just stands there while Palpatine like tells Vader his favorite cheeses because he just can. And this idea that it's done, it's locked, it's in place. And I've always been like, ah, yeah, but there's got to be a lot of interesting things going on. And this, there's tons of great books, tons of great comics, but this is a great on-screen. This is the Bad Batch's story, but through them, it is the story of the beginnings of the Empire.
Yeah. Pepper Jack.
Pepper Jack. Smoked a Gouda. Yeah. Okay. Hours and hours of Palpatine saying cheeses coming soon on our special episode.
Okay, but how torturous would that be? Because I don't think Vader can really eat any of that stuff. So he's probably like just visioning that dinner with Padme where he's floating fruit, just going, I'll never touch that food again. I'm so angry.
Yeah, I bet he can't even smell it. I bet Palpatine's floating cheese up to his mask. He's like, can you smell that? can you smell the roof fart? No, just all smells like lava to Vader, probably.
Oh, man.
All right, we are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to discuss all these great moments. This was a great discussion, Ken, of what I am thinking of now as the Data Rod of Hope. We'll be back to talk all of our favorite moments in just a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Riddle.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to continue our discussion of episode 6 of the Bad Batch Report, Decommissioned. We like to talk favorite moments. This had a lot of action. Ken, what were your favorite action moments?
I gotta get better at my notes. I focus on so many other things, especially lore connections, and I always go back and go, oh, I didn't write down a lot of action stuff, but I did write these things down. There was a Omega's, I'm calling Omega's slide, tuck and roll, and grab to get the droid head. You know, here we are.
I wrote it down as slide, roll, and head grab. So I'm glad we're on the same page.
We're on the same page. Put that on a T-shirt. Because, by the way, again, we're talking about strength and this and that. And, yeah, you know, maybe she does a push-up or two and can work that bow. Fine. That might be a fact of working a bow. But she's got her own kind of strength and her own kind of skills, which is what we were talking about earlier, about Bad Batch knowing that and accepting that and finding the best ways to use her in these big missions. And that was just a great little moment for me of like, yeah, you did that with flair.
Yeah, I really loved that moment because it was a good action moment for Omega, but it did just elicit all these things. That's what the Bad Batch is about, is being unique and having these different skills, and it feels like they're off their game, as this episode reminds us, because they're used to Crosshair being a part of their unit, and they kind of keep slipping up because they don't have that lookout who's working quite right. So to see not only Omega get the crossbow, which I was so excited that she got it back at the end, and that it is kind of going to be her signature weapon, because it's developing this individuality, but also like this is what I'm good at. I can dart into places that other people can't, you know, and doing that little roll through the legs and grabbing the head is awesome.
Yeah, I love that. Also, I'm keeping this in the show, but I just got a alert from Instacart that today is National Cheese Day. Did you know that when you referenced Palpatine and cheese?
No, it is the will of the Force. I am connected to the living cheese and the cosmic cheese, Ken.
Literally just came on my phone. It's National Cheese Day. Oh, well, yeah, Palpatine's aware of that. Anyways, sorry. I want to talk a little bit about Wrecker, if I may.
Please.
Wrecker's my guy. Not because I'm super strong, but super dense sometimes I am. But I love Wrecker facing his fears. Now, it didn't help his head. I didn't know what was that, but he faced his fears, man. And this goes back even when we first meet him in season 7 Clone Wars. We know this is a part of him and he's got to do it. And I love that they're just kind of like, I have a little bit of a baseball coach background. And, you know, sometimes rub some dirt and walk it off and figure it out might be the answer. It's not always the answer. You got to coach it to the individual. But I love that they're just like, figure it out, Wrecker, which just means like, you got to do this, man. You've got to do this. And he does. And I think he deserves it. Prize other than a head wound for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, there are some great Wrecker moments from the comedy to the tragedy. I'll save some of my Wrecker thoughts for the comedy because it was something that made me laugh out loud. But yeah, I loved the through line of him, of his fear of heights, pushing past it and knowing we, the audience, get to know that he's going through something dark and horrible up there of having his mind kind of taken away from him and having to kind of fight it off without even fully understanding what's happening. And then he still gets that big triumphant moment where he just jumps into the melee and does his classic Wrecker stuff, which is one of the moments I wrote down of like, look, anytime that you can hit the people you're fighting with other people that you're fighting, you know, he picks up that police droid and classic move, whacks the police droids with another police droid and then uses the police droid as cover. Great use of his environment. Good old Wrecker.
I noted that down as well. It's just good thinking. Just good thinking.
It's just logical. You got two threats, hit one with the other. Any other action moments for you?
I just put Hunter's big trick, which is the one about taking on the support to do the whole thing. It just, it looked beautiful. We talk about the show. Everyone's mentioned how just beautiful the show is. And you know what? I'm okay continuing to mention that because I was thinking today, I was like, how great this show looks at one point is just going to be common and we're going to forget. You know, we're just going to forget how beautiful the show looks. I think, you know, as a baseball guy, you'll watch some footage now and it's like high def. And then I'll go back to see an old clip from like 2003, which I thought was modern times. And I'm like, am I watching like film on a reel to reel? It's so old and grainy. So I want to take the time to appreciate how beautiful the show is now when we start forgetting. You know, it'll be sad. It's beautiful. And because of that, Hunter's trick and everything, the grappling hook and everything about it, it looked so good. It felt good. There's a lot of energy to it. Love the direction of it.
Yeah, I love moments where it is really the ingenuity of the characters as well. And I think that's so important in particular with the Bad Batch. And Hunter being, you know, he's got the tracking, he's got the enhanced senses, you know, but he's also the leader who should be looking for clever solution. So I love seeing that he had a clever solution. And you're right. I think it's got great thematic weight as well of, you know, questioning what you're supporting literally. And I love what you're saying about the visuals. Cause yeah, sometimes things advance slowly where if you're engaged, it just kind of all blends together. You know, for me playing video games a lot, the video games just kind of kept getting better and I didn't really think about it. And then sometime in, I don't know, probably around like 2007, I was telling my friend, you got to play GoldenEye. Like, have you seen GoldenEye? They're rectangle people. I can't play a video game with rectangle people. It didn't even occur to me because I didn't look back. So I think it's rare when something takes such a clear leap forward like Clone Wars Season 7 did and then Bad Batch where you're like, damn. Let's celebrate it. I think that's a great point.
I go back to baseball, but now video games, MLB The Show has a retro mode where you can play an older version of the video game. And then you're like, wow, I lived in the 19th century.
Did I need a manual crank to start this video game? Is that how old it is? Yeah. A couple of action moments for me. I put it under action because I think it's setting up action to come. I really loved Omega's crossbow struggle. I really loved how well it was depicted, the arms and the shaking, the effort to pull it back. I really liked Echo being the soldier trainer, which really made a lot of sense because Echo is the one who comes from a more traditional background. So he's passing that on to Omega and using, you know, the soldier word. And all that combined then with Sid's awesome, borderline frightening sharpshooting, right?
Yeah. Yeah, as of right now, I like Sid. You know, again, we'll see if she goes. And she said she's got to survive. She's down there on the ground, and that's part of what's going on. Is some of these folks are just so buried in it, they don't necessarily see the big picture yet. And eventually, she'll choose. But so I do love Sid. The Echo thing was great because he says the line, "Soldiers need to be consistent." And it's interesting to me because the other members of the Bad Batch have their own special skills. And one would argue they're not consistent with the rest of the clones. Yeah.
No. Yeah. But that's one of the things that's valuable from Echo being who Echo is. He is very different and unique because of his life experiences. But some of those life experiences are the reason he's called Echo, right? Is because he used to be obsessed with orders and regulations. So I love to see that bit of his character still there.
I love it. Yeah, it's great. Great call.
Yeah, I debated my final one, whether I would put it in comedy or action, but I went for action because I have too many in comedy. Man, just some classic B1 action, right? Bittersweet. But the one with no hands, you know, saying orders are orders, throwing itself at the police droid with a scream was one of my favorite action and comedy moments.
I think it straddles the line there for sure. But oddly enough, again, we're you mentioned with the roundabout way with the metal of the droids being the Star Destroyers you loved. But now going back to 99, it's like I would not have thought of my first viewing of Phantom Menace were 99, where Roger was the first thing to kind of maybe give me pause for the movie. And that opening sequence there on the Trade Federation ship to go now where I'm now rooting for battle droids as they're fighting police droids. It's like, wow, Star Wars is a journey. Let it ride.
Yeah, bittersweet. And just to be clear, I have no canon confirmation that battle droids become Star Destroyers. Yeah. That's just where my mind went with Corellia.
You're 100% right. But I put a note later on, Lore Connections, to talk about, like, it struck me that that's the skies above Corellia are empty pretty much here. And mm-hmm. we know later on that's not the case. And it just would make sense of where they're getting that metal.
Yeah. I mean, they're certainly repurposing the droids for something because Palpatine's not going to let that go to waste. Any other action moments before we go on to moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness?
Let's start chuckling.
Where do your chuckles begin, Ken? What's your first chuckle?
I want to go to a tech moment, which I know tech is so close to your heart, but this is how you and I, you know, comedy theory and breaking down jokes and all that kind of stuff. Tech giving the info on the tactical droids, funny. We've mentioned that a lot. Funny. But tech being panicked and unable to resist the urge to explain it a second before, hilarious.
Absolutely great. That was my first one, too, that, yeah, Sid's explaining it, and he interjects really quickly to define a tactical droid. Yeah. And we talk a lot about these great Star Wars morals of find out who you are, appreciate your individuality, including even your flaws, and draw strength from the truth of who you are. And this is this great bit of comedy that comes from anxiety that mm-hmm. somebody else will take my shtick.
Yeah, it is. If you're listening, go back and watch the episode. As she's talking, he's like playing a video game or something. He's
fixing space pinball. Yeah.
And he flips around and he literally is like, he's like a chihuahua about to bite me when I come into my fiance's office. It's a great moment.
And Sid's response really draws it out of, this is my briefing, goggles.
Yeah. Great.
So we got dark and broody for Hunter and goggles for tech. And we'll see what other insults that Sid has up her sleeves.
That's great.
What's next for you?
You mentioned a little bit, but we got a ton of battle droid humor. And I know a lot of people, especially at our Force Center Discord, have been already just celebrating the battle droid humor. We didn't have a battle droid gets promoted. I would have loved that, but no, just the what's happening. And then the response of, I don't know, did we win? I mean, that's just funny.
Did we win? What? There's a lot in this episode that functions as both tragedy and comedy. And I think did we win is a great tragic comedy line.
Yeah, love that.
So obviously not. You're on a scrap heap. So that was absolutely great. I think my next one was, you know, I always love just kind of background lines, particularly if they are delivered with a great amount of motion. And the Corellia worker sounds extra panicked when he yells, "We've got blaster fire!"
Yeah. Yeah.
It was one shot, a bad shot from that crossbow, but damn, I loved how panicked he was. It made me laugh.
You know, somewhere Wu Hair is really proud. No blasters.
Yeah. Maybe that's young Wu Hair. Everything is connected.
I got to get out of here. I'm going to get a nice bartending job somewhere else.
No blasters. This happened back on Corellia. What else for you?
Moment, was it Rafa up there on the catwalk with Omega? The whole, your arms look shaky, but just like, don't just stand there, grab a weapon. Omega's like, I had one. That's a A-plus delivery.
Yes. Omega, you used the term endearing, which I think is the perfect word last week to describe the overall effect of Omega. But yeah, her coming of age isn't just about knowledge in the galaxy and proficiency with weapon. It's also snark.
Yeah, good old fashioned snark.
Which was delivered well, which obviously she's going to pick up from this crew. For me, I feel horribly guilty about it, but I need to live my truth. I laughed out loud at 12:30 a.m. or whenever it was when Wrecker hit his head so hard. this has again been one of those great, I would say Star Wars, you know, riding that line and having that tension between the absurd and the profound, that he's the big bruiser who keeps violently hitting his head. And now it's becoming more and more clear to us that that is causing him great trauma and might even take away his autonomy, his agency. Mm-hmm. But the contrast between him pushing through his fear and bravely swinging across to just immediately cracking his head as hard as humanly possible. I laughed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you laugh when Wrecker hit his head, or am I bad person, Ken?
No. I'd love a good pratfall. When I was in Merchant of Venice in high school, I played old Gobo, and you know, the character is blind, actually sand blind, he claims. And I every night would run straight into a wood pole, probably again, connecting to Wrecker more than I know. It's a good ouch comedy bit works with me.
Yeah, I think it's also just building on the different ways that he's experiencing head wounds. It's getting to that point where they're going to be on some wide open desert planet and just a bird is going to swoop down, a steel pecker is going to swoop down out of nowhere and hit Wrecker in the head. No one else.
Yeah.
All right. What are some other moments for you?
Comedy moments. I got, I know this has been talked about a lot, but I've seen it already on Twitter, but is there an echo in here moment?
The absolute old school comedy duo vaudeville bit? Yeah.
Yes.
That's a pretty big, crystal clear bit of comedy there that we got to talk about.
Thank you. I felt I was watching a road picture in 1944. Yes, absolutely was.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. And it wasn't I guess you could say you saw it coming in a way, and sometimes that works for me in comedy and sometimes it doesn't. This was one, it just was like nailed just perfection. It was it was an homage to me of just an old kind of routine, vaudeville routine, like you said. So it worked. It absolutely worked.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I liked about it is that it's two jokes and the one joke distracts you from the other. Yeah. And the first joke of just the classic comedy duo bickering siblings. This is straight Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello. You could list a million sitcoms. This is, you know, a honeymooner's bit of the person who is in the relationship, technically, you know, lower station, says something, and then the person who's higher station says the exact same thing, not giving the other person credit, and you're left to wonder, like, did they just not hear, or is it truly the personality of the higher station person is that an idea is not valid until they hear themselves say it. So, like, great classic. That would have been like, oh, that's fun. That makes sense for Trace and Rafa, and that's fun. But the fact that that is just the entry point to is there an echo in here? Yes. What? I'm echo. It's and that's the part that gets funny to me, is because it is a great joke diversion of, you think we're making a joke over here, but we're making a joke over here. And then for me, what really makes it play is Echo is being dead serious. He is not in on the joke. And I've kind of been waiting for more Echo content in focus. And I feel like this episode, without being like Echo's episode, there was a little bit more Echo. There was that hint, of why he has the name Echo, of being a little bit more obsessed with the way it's done. And then I can just kind of imagine him feeling like he hasn't been with Bad Batch as long before the whole galaxy changed, and he's still trying to find his footing. Mm-hmm. He wants to be valuable. Mm-hmm. And then imagine that when this new person they're working with is like, is Echo here? Yeah, I'm here. What do you need?
I love this. I love breaking down jokes with you here. Yeah, because it is truly the final leg of this marathon or this joke track and field contest. Yeah, it's not a joke to him. It's a real moment. It's a moment to prove himself. It's a moment he's been waiting for. And there's no commenting on the joke. There's no It just stands alone. It's there. That's the final beat that worked really well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in general of just taking the big pullback of like, well, why is this here? I do think this is one of the things that the show is doing really well of, it is telling this horrific story of the Empire immediately just crushing down and dominating and harming the galaxy. Mm-hmm. But this is also Star Wars that really believes in hope. And I think the comedy is here to make sure that these characters stay alive and this doesn't become a grim, dark story where it's just clones brooding, right? It is a coming of age. It is Omega taking her first steps into a larger world and seeing it through those youthful eyes. And it is seeing that all of our characters can still have hope and levity even when they're in this, you know, hellscape.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Love it.
Last thing for me, and I bet you have it on your list too, is that great Omega beat of the Martez sisters asking, isn't that part of Ord Mantell CD? I'm like, very. It's great. I love that. So,
yes. I loved it. I loved it because Omega, she's so endearing. the blissfully unaware, she starts to learn the big picture. I loved it there. That was it. I also loved it as a comment of, I even know some people who are like, oh, we're going to go to a bar downtown LA. I'm like, that part? Yeah, it's great, huh? I'm like, okay, cool. Let's go live on the edge. Let's do it.
Yeah, and it's a great contrast because we kind of got that that feedback from tech of like, oh, this place is charming. Yeah. And it makes so much sense for Omega, who hasn't seen much but Camino and just wants to see the world and go like, oh, bunch of weird, scary stuff everywhere. Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was so fun.
All right. Any other comedy moments for you?
Overall, just I think you touched upon something that when Star Wars humor works really well, it's this kind of stuff where it all helps relieve some of the tension, but also moves everything forward and is insightful. I love a good head bop. Probably isn't super insightful at times. This one may be so, but I love the smart comedy at work here, and it really firing on all cylinders, I'll say again.
Nice. Well, let's fire on some cylinders of Star Wars canon, lore, connections to other stories, because there was kind of a lot in this episode. I just want to start with the Martez sisters, Trace and Rafa, and right. Just the basic, Ken, were you happy to see them? Does them appearing in this show make canon feel connected? What are your thoughts on all that?
I was pleasantly surprised. This is not something I think we've talked about. Two great characters we love, and we'd love to see more of them. And I think because we're focused on some of the other characters we've already met or ones we want to see, these are still relatively new characters, so you don't necessarily, they don't pop to mind right away for some fans. So I was really happy with that, really happy. And it just isn't a, hey, look at us. It is a real strong continuation from where we left off.
Yeah, I think when they first popped up, I was really pleasantly surprised. And I was like, ooh, this is great. Going to be great to find out, you know, where they are now. How are they affected by the Empire, by the Republic falling and the Empire rising? They weren't big fans of Jedi, except for Ahsoka, which I think kind of gets referenced. But yeah, as the episode went on and it became clear, everything that we were talking about of like, this isn't just as fun as it is a character, you know, popping up. This is really showing their growth and showing the effect of somebody like Ahsoka can have on people. I think it is a point for the Jedi of showing that kindness, showing that it matters who and what you fight for. And then to see Rafa, who is so jaded, have taken that lesson so to heart, and to see them together was and representing that. There's a reason that they're there. And then, yeah, for me, I think it does just make the canon feel connected. I don't think there's ever really much of a challenge with the animated shows not feeling connected, maybe with the acceptance of Resistance, because it's just on the timeline, it's kind of out there on its own. Right. But the tradition between particularly Clone Wars, Rebels, and now Bad Batch, it's really great to see that connection.
Yeah, and this one works. And I guess maybe it's a comment on me and my lack of faith in these two wonderful characters. I don't know when they popped up, because the description on Disney Plus was very vague, like Bad Batch finds himself at odds with other smugglers for the same target or whatever it was. I'm thinking, okay, so we're going to get a second team here.
It's Dengar, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, right. Well, a little bit of that or just something like that. And then, so when it popped, when it's Trace and Rafa, I literally went, oh, they kind of went back to how they were. Like I was, and then I was like, man, I just said no faith in them or Ahsoka. I just felt real bad. I felt real bad. I owe them an apology.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was right there with you going, what is this about? Is this a story of darkness where the Empire has made them go like, look, it's hard out there. We got to do what we have to do. Complete opposite.
But yeah, no, powerful.
Yeah. And I also think it's another point in the column of patience, because I think a lot of people weren't sure about those episodes of Clone Wars Season 7. Mm-hmm. I really like those episodes. I do sometimes wonder if the story could have been told in a shorter fashion. I think the here's four episodes about the clones. Here's four episodes about Ahsoka. Here's the episode of four episode finale about Ahsoka and the clones. It all works really well. But now I enjoy it even more because this episode benefits from the sheer volume of time and nuance that we spent with Trace and Rafa in Season 7.
Totally.
So then let's get into the thing that I think the episode wants us to talk about. I have not had a time to see what the Star Wars talkosphere is talking about, but the great who are they communicating with at the end? I do believe they use male pronouns, so it is a he. What takes did you have, Ken? Did you feel teased? And do you have an answer to your own teasing?
Yeah, I you go in any direction, pronouns aside there. And then you literally put a list of Ahsoka, Rex, Bail, Maul, Saw, Rykan, Dodonna, Lux Bonteri, Shriv, Moochie.
Moochie. Yeah, I love it. Moochie in a cloak. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Rex for my money, or Bail, but I'll go Rex.
Yeah, I think it's Rex. I think that there is that desire to have some, you know, ooh, what if Ahsoka is active in this moment? You know, the novel timeline, you know, I haven't dug into that. The big thing for me is I did dig into R7A7, Ahsoka's droid. Yep. That is with her when she flies in the Clone Wars, and featured at different points throughout the Clone Wars, also featured in that final episode of Victory and Death. They mention their droid as R7, and the coloring is very similar to me. So I do think it's R7A7. And I went back and reviewed that final episode of Clone Wars. R7A7 does get shot. But then when Rex and Ahsoka have buried the clones and are setting up that, you know, amazing memorial with their helmets, there is a shot of the pieces of R7A7 piled up under the Y-wing. So for me, that really feels like, yeah, they put R7A7 back together. We would assume from the Ahsoka novel that R7 is not with her. So it makes a lot of sense to me that, yes, R7 is with Rex. And he has made some connection to Trace and Rafa.
Yeah, and I think it's a good test for Star Wars fans around the world to have to use that word assume or the phrase we think based on recent, you know, canon blurrings. We can't all be know-it-all experts, and that's a good thing for us.
Yeah, and I want it to be fun to speculate, right? Like, that's the thing, too, that sometimes, you know, if we say one even ambiguous thing or one incorrect thing, sometimes it's not fun to get tweets, even if they're meant well, to be like, but this, you know. And I want to be able to have fun speculating, particularly when the show invites you to, right? I mean, this was a straight up cliffhanger to make you go, ooh, who is it?
Yeah.
You know? So I want to be able to embrace that fun and not be afraid of being, you know, quote unquote, wrong, because right now we're having fun speculating.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So my money's on Rex. Second, you know, I'll say Dodonna, Jan Dodonna.
Oh, nice. Young Dodonna. Younger Dodonna. Yeah. I really lean toward Rex, particularly with the underline of like the clones and the fact that Rex has been, you know, mentioned in the series. And I believe there is a shot of him in the teaser trailer, in one of the trailers. So I'm very excited to see Rex wearing what looks like a poncho.
We love our ponchos, the underrated wardrobe in Star Wars.
Could be a cloak. Could be Bail Organa. You're right. Could be Lux Bonteri. But right now I'm speculating Rex in a poncho.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, we've talked about it a lot, but also canon in this episode, just spending some quality time, horrific quality time with battle droids of all kinds, B1, B2, tactical droid. Any other thoughts on that canon connection?
The big one was kind of what we were talking about what they might be used for. I think, again, I'd say implied to a certain degree. You know, we don't know the effects quite yet on that, or maybe we'll get it in some book somewhere. I love, though, the idea of just seeing what happened to the droids, but also it's a bit of circle of life when you go back to attack the clones and kind of see how a lot of them are built. It is truly a little dust to dust type of action going on here.
Yeah, from Geonosis to Corellia, the life of a battle droid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's also like, I like that they are appearing because we are dealing with the immediate aftermath of the Clone Wars, right? And that's what's exciting about it. I really hope we get some episodes with some people who were explicitly separatists and what's going on with them. and more moments of different crime lords going, all right, we are open for business, so we can really enjoy the uniqueness of this time period. And battle droids being melted down for parts is a unique part of where we are in the timeline.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go on to Corellia. Any other thoughts on visiting the home of Han Solo?
I was excited, and I didn't expect to. I thought maybe we might see like Lady Proxima or something like that, or the early White Worm gang. I had those vibes, but I just got excited because in my head I was like, somewhere, a real young Han and Kira are just roaming around, you know, just
there.
We see Coronet City. I loved all that. Loved that connection.
Yeah, I think for me, what it really made me appreciate is, look, the planet Corellia has been known for a long time, right? And just hearing that would have been cool. But with the Solo film, getting to spend time there, getting to even just visually, but also through the lines of Han about how his father used to build, you know, mm-hmm. be on the line building the YT-1300s, and you know a little bit of the feel and the history of this place. And without the episode needing to be explicit about it, we know that people's lives are changing because mm-hmm. what used to be a proud, you know, community culture of builders who make great things and are proud of it, you know, they're going to be ground down into just, you know, poorly paid, mistreated people who are just pumping out the machinery of war, and the pride is gone and the pain is in.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point.
And I think just, you know, having that direct connection to those emotions and ideas because of Solo mm-hmm. that then enhanced this episode is really great.
Yeah. And it's on a, just a surface level, again, fun, but just to see, you know, you can't help but just think of those opening moments in Solo Star Wars story. And I just, for fans of that movie, it's a little bit of fun and small amount of vindication, but also just it's truly connected. It's truly the Star Wars galaxy we're roaming around in. So
it worked. Yeah. Absolutely. A couple more for me. The Ithorian with the blue jumper. They have done this gag in Clone Wars Season 7, but I love seeing the Ithorian dressed like the action figure Hammerhead was.
Yeah.
In the ridiculous blue jazzercise jumper. I believe this character's name is Bolo. There's a character's name in the credits, Bolo and Ketch. And I tried to dig for it. I believe he's Bolo.
That would make sense.
And I feel like we're going to probably spend more quality time with Bolo. So excited for that.
Yeah. We'll get a new Ithorian figure, Bolo, but the same classic kind of look.
Yes, just named Bolo now. And then having a little bit of that tech on his neck, mm-hmm. back hump. How did you feel about those police droids? The police droids themselves seem to be new, but the language they were speaking sure wasn't. How did you feel about that?
No, one of them drops an Echuta, and you know, how rude. No, I did like it. It's similar to Mandalorian, when you can throw a police droid or a security droid or an enforcer droid that are maybe technically not on the good side, but just, you know, they're doing their job, whatever. And our heroes need to destroy them. It's easier to do that with droids, right? So I like
it. Yeah. Otherwise they would have had to been stunning a bunch of underpaid Corellians.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I loved hearing the police droid drop the old E-bomb of Echuta.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. I should mute myself here on that one.
It is very rude. Final thing for me is the Bad Batch's ship, the Havoc Marauder, clinging to the Imperial cargo ship and Echo saying this old trick. How did you feel about that? Was that calling out the trick too much?
No, loved it. Loved it because it's a weird circle, right? So he's referencing an old trick for us, but a trick that's 20 plus years from happening in Empire Strikes Back with the Falcon. So I just love... I just loved it. I don't know. It just worked for me as an old Star Wars fan, I guess. It just was like a good nod. I didn't laugh out loud. I just went like, yeah, that's fun. That's great.
It did. It does drive home what's going on in Empire, that the stiff, rigid Empire is not familiar with this trick. But Boba Fett's like, come on, Solo. That's sad.
Love that.
Any other moments of canon connection that you wanted to highlight, discuss?
Yeah, just one I wanted to highlight. In the beginning there, in the background, there's a slot machine that has a battle droid jackpot and a clone trooper helmet on the casing of the game. And so I want to play that, number one, but two, what's the story there?
Like on the, I missed this one. So it's like on the video game itself, like this is a Clone Wars video game.
Yeah, and it's got like you know, like a slot machine, the three wheels, and the, I think the center and the right one have the battle droid in the center, you know, spot, and then the left one's down below. Like it's, you almost got a droid jackpot.
Okay, so not a video game, but a slot machine. Wonder how the clones feel about that
video slot. Yeah, and then on, so I said, oh, that's pretty funny. And then they kind of pull out, and on the box, on the casing of the machine, on the game, is a clone. It's a clone trooper helmet. So like, is the point of the game to destroy battle droids by getting the jackpot? Like, is this what's going on? I don't know.
Well, when they physically make that game and it costs $5,000, maybe we can save up our allowance.
You know me with Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings slots. You've been with me in Vegas. You know, you put that there, I'll be dumping quarters in there all day.
Yeah, I mean, I might stage an intervention. I think you could lose a lot to that slot machine.
I need to get the battle droid.
You're trying to fight for good. You're making your choice. I won't get in the way of that. Was there anything in this episode then that you disliked or questioned?
None of this is tinged with any negativity. It's just a question. It's just a thought, and it's part of the victory of the episode, and the part of just me wanting to have a discussion about it here. So follow me here. We got Fennec, we got Trace and Rafa now. We potentially, you know, we do believe we have Rex and others along the way, and Corellia, and they all fit seamlessly into the story. And I don't think you need to know much about it. You get it. Trace and Rafa can be complete strangers to you. You get it. They are opposing smugglers who are fighting for a bigger cause. Fennec Shan, even Sid says it. I know who that is, but that looks like a bounty hunter. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, that's all you need to know. And these, the creatives here are doing great work with it. So this isn't that kind of question, but it's like, so I love what they're doing. I will Bad Batch stand on its own? And I don't even know what that means. Is this Mando season one, I guess, or is it Mando season two, where it starts to become a roll call of people and planets and things we know? And then maybe is that what we all just, maybe we're all okay with it. I'm countering myself here that's kind of maybe what we need or what we want. This has been a wonderful cross-section of eras with strong emotional canon connections. So it's doing everything right, I believe. I've been enjoying it. But this episode, I just had a couple of those moments of like, man, if you know the story of Trace and Rafa, this might mean a little bit more. I don't know. And I just thought now's a good time to maybe talk about it.
Yeah, no, I really came to the forefront of my mind this episode as well of, yeah, all the other episodes, there are things that you definitely enjoy more if you know the depth and you know the connections. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, this episode, maybe it was because the combination of Trace and Rafa and also like the tactical droid. Like if you've watched that tactical droid, those tactical droids, those many tactical droids bring the pain to the clones, episode after episode in the Clone Wars, you've kind of experienced that. You have actually gone through and like, yeah, I remember when the tactical droid learned that and slaughtered this many clones, that you have an emotional relationship to that. There's nothing that you can't understand because both Sid and Tech explain it to us. But there is a stronger emotional connection. I think my hope is that if somebody had seen the little bits and pieces of Star Wars, but they're going to try out this Bad Batch show. Mm. My hope is that it would feel like a tip of the iceberg storytelling, like we talk about, where it's a fun discovery. You have everything you need to understand the episode, and you have everything you need to emotionally invest in Omega and these clones who had their life just totally turned upside down. You have everything you need just in this show to go on an emotional journey. And I hope it's like a fun tip of the iceberg storytelling where you watch this episode, you understand who Trace and Rafa are, and then it's a fun discovery. Like, what? I can basically go watch their prequel. I can go watch their origin story. Awesome. That's what I hope the experience is for people who aren't super all in.
Yeah, no, I think it is. Like I said, no negativity tinged to this question. I know, you know, Mando season two, I enjoyed, you enjoyed, but there were some conversations out there. I know some friends of ours who were like, they just started to roll call people I knew before. I wish it had nothing to do with anything that I've known before, which is a fair desire to have. I would point out Trace and Rafa in season 7. We got a lot of, who are them? Who are they? What's going on? Give us people we know. And now they're characters from the past, the recent past. You know, that's just kind of how it works. I think that's an interesting phenomenon. So I think they're doing a great job. I just wondering, it's like, are we going to have a guest star every week of you knew them from? And I don't think we are. But like, and again, by the way, I think I'm okay with that. They're doing a great job with it. I just wonder if will it become too much? Will you start seeing some of those tweets and stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like for me, there's like all sorts of different ways to approach this question. There's the the question of how accessible is any individual story of Star Wars? Can you just sit down and watch it? Then there's the question of, can we ever, just to kind of even prove that Star Wars can have a story or a show or a movie that really doesn't butt up against a lot of other things we know, main characters or main timeline. And I think that was the Mandalorian conversation. The first season felt like this is just this Mandalorian's adventure. It's not connected to big things. And then the second one is season is Boba Fett, Ahsoka, Luke Skywalker, you know, perhaps the biggest thing. Right. And then there's that question of, as we always try to ask, of why are the characters there? Do they inform, do they make sort of canonical sense? And do they inform the journey of the main character that we're following?
Yeah.
And I think for me, my answer in Mandalorian season 2 was like, yes, they were important, emotional steps in Din's journey. And they were logical to this lived in universe of myths and legends that this is the legend who is operating then. That's who would show up. That's who would answer this call. And I feel the same about Bad Batch right now, because I don't feel like it's just like last week of, we need a villain. Who's a cool one? You know, like I love He-Man. He-Man's a totally different, you know, beast. But you know, like you just turn on an episode of He-Man back when I was a kid and you're like, well, some weeks it's Beast Man. Some weeks it's Merman. Other times Evil Lyn's the main hench person. The Zygarians showed up to help paint the picture of what the galaxy is. Mm-hmm. Trace and Rafa showed up to help paint the picture of what the galaxy is. They seem so chosen to let us understand not just how the Bad Batch is affected by the New Order, but by how the whole galaxy is. So as a fan for myself, I'm loving it. Bring it on. Let me know how every person I've ever met in Star Wars who's alive right now is affected by this.
Yeah, going back to what we were saying about the planets up top of, you're not just roll calling the planets. You're actually seeing these planets that you know, and now they're affected. You're just getting a little case study there. Yeah, again, I'm on it. I'm mostly positive for that kind of stuff, right? Like, I love the new characters. I love, I'll die on the hill of Holdo should have been Holdo and Ackbar should have been Ackbar. You know, for many reasons, but a lot of them just like, I want new characters. I want that. But I also, this is Star Wars. I love this 19-year time period. I kind of don't want the Skywalker saga to end. Like, I have trouble with Thrawn adventures that have nothing to do with this galaxy. I know, like, I or regions, you know. So I'm there on both sides of it. But it's like we always say in punditing about Star Wars, it's truly about the execution of the story and all the pieces put together. And they're doing a great job. They're doing a great job. It just, this episode particularly, because I don't think I was expecting Trace and Rafa where I was waiting for Fennec Shand. This was like, oh, okay, cool. We're doing this. And how's that working? And do I like it? And I think the answer sometimes, it's nice to be reaffirmed. The answer is yes for me.
Yeah, the answer is yes for me as well. And I think because I feel like anyone could sit down and watch Bad Batch and still be hooked by the main characters in their journey.
Totally.
And the rest is just depth and connection that is hopefully an invitation to explore more Star Wars. Yeah. I feel so strongly about this. You know what I want, Ken? Yeah. I really want the Bad Batch to go to Naboo, and I want Tech and C.O. Bibble to have a long conversation together.
This is exactly what we need. That's exactly what we need. Come on.
Anything else that you disliked or questioned in this episode?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, this is an incredibly tiny thing for me, but I think it is a reflection of the fact of how excited I am for Omega to find that bow and to make it a part of her individuality and her identity, that the shot of her finding it was very fast. Partially because I was just, my first view, I watched this twice, and in my first watch through, I was just like, I'm intrigued by everything else that is going on in the episode. When is Omega going to find the bow?
Yeah.
And the shot of her finding it is very fast. So that is my horrific criticism of this episode. Linger longer on crossbow shots.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about hopes for next episode. I'm already thrown out there. They got to go to Naboo to see how things are going there. And I want Seal Bibble to explicitly state his feelings and the reality of what's going on and see how Tech handles that. Do you have hopes for the next episode?
Yeah, I need them to not need. That's a dangerous word in Star Wars talking. Huh? I would love to see them deal with a choice that seems to be made. And when you go back to Sid and say you failed, and if you tell her the truth, you know, does that butt up against the choice she's made for you? And maybe this next episode or two is them really deciding which direction they're going in this galaxy.
Yeah, the way that these last few episodes were connected of their own adventure, but they're very serialized, made me feel very much like the next episode might have a heart to heart with Hunter and Sid, with Hunter going, mm-hmm. you know, hey, this works for us up to a point. But we need to know what we're working for. And then I'm kind of like that we have a lot of great threads and you don't know which one's going to go off, right? Next week could be Wrecker's head goes off. Next week could be Crosshair or somebody else catches up with them. Next week could be, hey, we got some information somewhere about exactly who Fennec Shand is or who might have hired her. Or perhaps my biggest hope that Rex comes looking for the Bad Batch, because that's our direct cliffhanger, and I sometimes do like just picking up on the direct cliffhanger. If that is Rex, which is our assumption right now, and he's being given information of like, yeah, there are these rogue clones, and I know exactly where they are, that Rex would go, great, here we go.
Great indeed.
Any other thoughts or hopes for next episode?
In terms of plot, the reveal, like I wouldn't mind some of this stuff, even who's behind Fennec and all that kind of stuff. I wouldn't mind some answers here and there, but I'm okay with stretching it out a little bit.
Yeah. Let's have some fun stretching. Is there anything that we haven't talked about in this episode that you wanted to touch on?
I do want to highlight, you mentioned up top, you're always great to make sure we give the directors and writers credit, but Amanda Rose Munoz, this is her first credited Star Wars story. What a spectacular job. It was really probably the most complete episode for me so far this season, and really tip of the cap to Amanda Rose Munoz.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to see a lot of that great mix of Star Wars new and old. A lot of those directors we know well, obviously a lot of the people behind the show is executives and, showrunners have been involved for a long time. Then it's great to see these other people celebrating. This is my first Star Wars script, and they're great scripts.
Yeah.
So great mix of new and old. The thing that we haven't talked about that I wanted to touch on is after I watched that first episode and I was reflecting on all the things that you and I just talked about with Trace and Rafa, it suddenly popped into my head, how long until Hondo?
Oh, yeah.
Are you excited for Hondo to continue his animation supremacy?
Yeah, I'm okay. Yeah, I am. I think I always liked Hondo. It's just, especially on a rewatch of Clone Wars that you and I have been doing on Clone Wars Report. I like Hondo. I want to see the different chapters of his life.
Yeah, the next chapter of Hondo, I think he will pop up in Bad Batch. Mm-hmm. If you could have a figure or toy of any character or moment from this episode, what do you want?
I forgot I wrote this down. I just scrolled down and going to laugh because we already talked about it. But I do need a life-size clone slot machine. So I think I got a bit of a problem. I forgot to put that down.
All right. Well, I think that one might actually come true someday. For me, I always like those cinema scenes that they used to make with the 3 3/4 action figures, the 3 posed. I would love a cinema scene of the crossbow training. So you got Sid, Omega, and then Bolo, the betting Athorian.
Oh, that's great.
And then the other thing I want is, because I did like it and the twist in the story, I would like a life-size data rod, just a, a USB that is just entirely too large because it's made to look like it's from Star Wars.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah. Yeah. I love novelty USB external hard drive things.
Yeah. So those are our demands to the galaxy, to the Force itself, life-size slot machines and data rods. Yes. With that, Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Oh, man, I'd love to. We are Force Center Podcast. Thank you all. A lot of new ears coming through to check out the Bad Batch Report, so we appreciate that. We can be found on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. We also can be followed on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. If you'd like to get an audiobook on us, go to audibletrial.com/Force Center. And you can also find the podcast in a lot of spots, including Anchor, iHeartMedia, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon Music. The list goes on and on and on. And of course, you can support us directly by going to patreon.com/Force Center. You can also follow me at Catnapsock or go to my website, catnapsock.com. Also check out the GPA.fun, where we're building an empire of fun over there. And for you, Joseph, where can they go?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And for all my other comedy adventures, you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Clone Wars slot machines, this has been the Bad Batch Report.